anyone would like to share, and particularly sharing anything about what was supporting you, where did you find the ease, perhaps what did you discover this evening that perhaps was new or remembering of something that you might have forgotten.
I just wanted to say that practicing with the breath is very very centering and calming. To take the very deep inhale, feeling my diaphragm go out instead of my chest, and then a very deep exhale. And when I do that, my body is almost like reminded, oh yeah, here we are. And I do that a few times deliberately, and then I just, that breath just kind of helps me really get into the place where I want to be when I'm meditating. And I just wanted to share that because that's my focus when I start.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So taking some of the deep breaths as part of the preparation for the practice. Yes, there's someone here.
Thank you. I found what made me really at ease. I was very physically comfortable. Mm. And when I'm not physically comfortable, it can be very distracting, quite annoying. And the temperature, the seats, the cushion all gave me that comfort. Mm. And I was able to, even my hands making contact with each other was comforting me. Mm. So that inner comfort allowed me to drop in to my practice much deeper. Mm. And also the ease of what supported my practice actually was the ease of not having so much external stimuli that you have here in Washington, D.C. Mm. And the community practice, mm. so supportive, very different when we practice on our own. Mm. And I found that really rich tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there perhaps one more?
I just appreciated all the choices that she gave in the meditation. Almost every instruction came with, you know, you can do your own or follow this, or the openness of choice made me more receptive to listening and following her instructions. So thank you.
Hmm. Thank you. Choice can be so important. We can think easily that there's one right way of doing things, one right way of perhaps sitting on a cushion and following the breath in a particular place. And yet there are many options and many paths to awakening. The thing that choice requires of us is a deep inner listening and a listening to ourselves to find out what we really prefer and what's working for us. And that in itself can be a pathway to wholeness, that reconnection with the inner voice. I have a poem from the wonderful poet Mary Oliver, who herself had a lot of trauma early in her life, which she was very open about. And this is a poem about discovering that inner voice, and it's called The Journey. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles. Mend my life, each voice cried. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible. It was already late enough in a wild night and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voice behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. That process of discovering our own inner voice, our own inner knowing, is both a byproduct of our practice. The more that we do practice connecting with ourselves, however we might do that, the easier it is to hear that inner voice. And also the more we ask to hear it, the more we do sense it, the more we can create a life that's in line with our own preferences, our own needs, our own particular way of doing things, when we begin to trust it, and learning to trust it as part of the path. I'd like to talk tonight about what some of the wise choices that we can make when we are practicing in times of difficulty, and whether you had a lot of difficulty early in your life or not. There are times in every life where there is stress and challenge. So you may be coming tonight with a lot of current stress and perhaps even trauma recovery from past stresses, past traumas that are with you now. Or you may be practicing and putting things in place so that if life becomes difficult in the future, you will have these resources available to us. One of the things that we can do if we were thinking about starting on a journey, and we can use that metaphor of a journey, if we were going on a journey, and last summer I went on a very long walk, 250 miles in the south of France, one of the things that you would do is to get support, right? And we can find out, and one of the things we were practicing with tonight is, where is the support? Right? And to acknowledge the supports that are there, because sometimes support is there, but we don't recognize it, or we recognize it, but we're hesitant to use it. So we can encourage ourselves, and we can start to practice noticing what it's like when we offer ourselves certain type of support, whether it's the hand on the heart, or opening our eyes, or sensing, you know, the chair or the floor underneath us. And there's both outer support. So the kinds of outer support that's available this evening are things like the group as a whole, the group energy. And certainly many people do find it easier to practice when they're together in a group. Some of the other supports for being present here and now are the sensory cues, the visual cues, opening your eyes, seeing where you're at. Right? If when we're practicing meditation, our mind starts taking us someplace we really don't want to go, if we open our eyes, it's a really strong clue that we're actually here right now. Right? And we can use that as a resource. Likewise, the sounds can also bring us into the present by telling us that we're here now and not somewhere else. Right now, there's also supports of the teacher, the guidance, the chair, the floor, the earth, perhaps the support of the hand on the heart. These outer supports, actually the hand on the heart is one of the first inner supports, and there's many of those as well. We have the support of the home base in our body. Where is the place in the body of greatest ease and comfort? Right? It might be that your body has pain, and it seems like there's pain everywhere. Like this week, I've been practicing with itchiness. I've had poison ivy on all four of my limbs, and it felt like the itchiness was everywhere. But when I looked closely, it actually wasn't everywhere. And I did a lot of practicing this week with the soles of my feet. I don't have any poison ivy there, and the soles of my feet were without any distress, itchiness, pain, discomfort. They were a resource for me, which I relied on. We can find out where we can sense the breath most easily in the body. We can discover which one of the things that are happening in the present moment brings us the greatest sense of aliveness, that mix of aliveness and ease at the same time. Right? The first foundation of mindfulness is the body, but it includes many, many different practices, including seeing practices, hearing practices, being with sound, being with any sensations in the body, one place in the body like our home base, or the breath in the body, including the body scan, right? The body scan where we bring attention to the body moment to moment. All of these are practices that aid us in cultivating that first foundation. One of the other resources for us is our resource, our ability to be able to name our experience. The brain scientists tell us if we can name it, we can tame it. And by that, they mean that even if what we're experiencing isn't particularly pleasant for us, maybe it's unpleasant, like my itchiness, the moment I say the word itchiness and it matches my experience, it actually sends a calming message to my mind. It's almost like, oh, someone's here paying attention. You know, someone's noticing, someone's listening. It's like if we were to be talking to a friend of ours and they were reflecting back to us what we were saying, we would feel that somebody was with us who really got it, who really understood. And we can be that person for ourselves in our meditation practice and in everyday life just by simply naming the experience that we're having. And as I was encouraging you this evening, we can also notice the tone of voice that we're naming the experience with, choosing a kind and friendly tone of voice. So we can practice noticing itchiness and noticing non-itchiness with the same tone of voice, right? It's a practice. It's something that takes effort. It may not come natural to us. One of the things that I was guiding you to do this evening is to notice where you would move your attention or what resources you might use if your mind did head in the direction of distress, or you did find yourself in distress, or just felt like you had enough. That is having a plan for, you know, when it's too much. Our practice often is about noticing what's happening right now and then asking ourselves, can I be with it? Can I just let it be? But there are times when truly the inner answer seems like it's no. No, I just really can't be with this right now, right? I might have noticed it and named it temporarily, but it's just too much. It's too unsettling. It's too ungrounding. So then we need to move our attention somewhere else. We don't need to leave the present moment, right? It might be a habit that we have cultivated, and it is a coping mechanism, right, to kind of leave the present moment altogether. But there are other options. We can start to move our attention where we want it to be. And this is one of the most important aspects of our mindfulness practice, of our meditation, that we can not only come back to an anchor like the breath, come back repeatedly again and again and stay there, right? And the mind often settles. But just as importantly, it's important to notice that we have the ability to move our attention where we want it to be, somewhere else, right? Somewhere else that relates to the present moment. So we can move our attention to sound, to sight, to the hand on the heart, right, to the place of ease in the body. Where is that place of ease right now? What's most pleasant in this moment, right? It's a question that I asked you at the end. What's most pleasant in this moment? Because there's always an answer to that question. Question that I often get is, how much distress should I allow into my awareness before I move my attention somewhere else? And actually, a wise person, or someone asked this question of a wise person in the form of Thich Nhat Hanh, and this is something that he has written about in his books, and his answer to that question was, not much. Not much distress. Right? Not much distress, because that's not what our practice is about, right? If normally we sit with the breath, but for some reason today, when we sit with the breath, the mind is just going to distressing stories, perhaps, you know, something stressful is happening in the life, then we need to find something else to do. And perhaps that something else might involve a different practice altogether, like movement, right? Like going for a walk or doing some gardening or going for a run or engaging in an activity that brings us joy and happiness, right? We often think that in order to recover, we need to do the hardest thing, but often it's about continually finding the ease, finding the ease. A friend of mine was a student of Thich Nhat Hanh's about 20 years ago, and she herself had childhood abuse and had asked Thich Nhat Hanh, well, how much joy should I allow in my life? You know, if I'm always looking for the joy, right? It's the other question, right? How much distress? But like, well, if it's not distress, then joy, right? And maybe that's bad too. Right? And how much joy should I allow in? And won't that be selfish, or won't I become self-absorbed? And he said, if you had trauma in your life as a child, then you could, in his words, water the seeds of your joy every day of your life for the whole rest of your life, and it would never be too much. You could never overdose on it, right? We know this from modern medicine now. You know, there's a whole field of pain medicine. And if you have surgery, they ask you, right, how much pain you're in on a scale of 1 to 10, right? And if you have a 6 and even a 5, right, they want to up your dose because they don't want to wait until your pain is at a 7 or 8 or a 9 or a 10 in order to give a bigger dose or another dose, because then you're already in so much distress, it often becomes a chronic cycle, and it's easier to have the pain be manageable when we start acting on our own behalf when we're inching up there, right? So let's not wait until we're completely overwhelmed, completely swamped by whatever might be happening in our mind, for instance, right? And we do know that when we have had traumatic stress, and it might be something really big and chronic, or it might be something that just happened recently, something very acute in our life. But whenever it happens, our mind does go and fight, flight, or freeze, right? And if we're sitting quietly and trying to stay present, then the only thing that's really present in the mind as an option is fight, right? The automatic pilot mode of the mind is fight in terms of, and who's it fighting with if we're sitting there quietly? Right? It's me. I'm going to fight with myself, right? So the mind just is in that mode, and it's very much driven by our biology. It's really one place where evolution hasn't perhaps fully come to fruition yet, in that it seems like insult to injury that when we need the kindness of our mind the most, right, when we're already struggling, the mind really is not our friend in that moment in terms of what it's doing automatically. On the other hand, we do have a consciousness and we can move our attention, we can apply kindness, we can give ourselves some support, the hand on the heart or kind words, right? Or we can move our attention, we can allow ourselves to find like a safe haven for our attention and to rest there for a while, whether it's a place in the body or with breath or sound. One of the questions that can be really helpful to ask ourselves, along with noticing the ease, is what do I need right now? Right? What do I need right now? And it was a question that I asked as we were setting our intention for tonight, and allowing the universe of answers to be something that you could give yourself during the practice. Right? Perhaps just, you know, offering a certain attitude like patience or kindness to yourself. We often think that what do I need needs to be, kind of in the big picture, but it can be really helpful to ask the question of ourselves, on a regular basis, right? What do I need right now? And especially during those times when we do have some choice about what to do with our time. You might have some choices to make later this evening after you go home. You have some choices to make about when you're driving home, if you're listening to music or listening to news or just having silence in the car. There are choices to make about once you're home, what you're doing or not doing. You're going to power up your devices or turn on the TV or perhaps give yourself some quiet time for the rest of the evening. And then what time are we going to sleep? You know, there are many, many different choices that we make. Are we going to eat something? Are we going to start a new project? Are we going to do something that might be calming to ourselves? And we can ask ourselves, what do I need right now? And particularly, like, what do I need tonight from the time that you leave or the time that I ring the bell and we're done? Maybe you'd like to stay and stay for the group afterwards. There is a group, a discussion group. Right? We have ideas and we have automatic ways of doing things. And one of the things that we can do with our practice, and one of the ways our practice can be beneficial, is once we have made a connection with ourselves through our meditation practice, regardless of what practice we're doing, we can use that connection to sense our inner wisdom. There is wisdom in the body and the heart. And often what we're most aware of is just what's in the mind or just what is our habit to do. So I invite you right now to just take a moment to go inside and to consider this evening, perhaps placing a hand on your heart or making contact with the body, perhaps sensing the breath in your body. And asking yourself, what do I need? Letting the universe of answers be something that's possible for you to give yourself this evening, considering the time that you might have here, the ride home, time after. What do I need? Noticing how it's different than what you might want. Allowing the question to go into the heart and the body. What do I need this evening? There's many other things that I'd like to encourage you to do as we've been exploring putting a foundation in place and looking for the ease. And part of it is I'll encourage you to start slow, especially during times when there have been stress in your life, to perhaps start small with a few minutes a day. There have been many people who have found great healing by simply starting with practicing 5 minutes a day, once or twice a day, and doing whichever practice brings you the greatest sense of being alive, here and now, awake, and also that sense of ease in the moment to celebrate the successes that you've had, perhaps just by coming here tonight and taking that first step. There's many new people here tonight. And as you do go home and start to practice on your own, I'll encourage you to allow yourself to go at your own pace and to do it your own way, regardless of how anyone else is practicing, right? Or whichever practices you think you should be doing. There are actually thousands of different practices. If you study the Buddha's writing, the Buddha actually came up with a unique practice for pretty much everyone he met, right? And yet, you know, what we often consider as the right practice is a small universe, so we can discover for ourselves listening to that inner voice that we have and asking for what you need, both of yourself and also the people around you here, the other teachers. There are KM groups in this community, which are groups, small groups of people who get together to practice together. And also, it's possible to ask for what you need of the community and the teachers, right? Many teachers offer one-on-one sessions to help you find your own unique way of doing the practice in a way that will support you the best. So I will ring the bell now and encourage you once more to just take a moment to notice what's most pleasant in this moment. Making the effort to notice what's most pleasant and perhaps offering yourself a hand on the heart if that helps you feel your own inner warmth, or offering yourself your own inner smile. We have some moments now for some Q&A, and then I'll be ending our session with some brief practice of loving kindness meditation. But if there are any questions or comments, the mics are on the floor, and especially related to the topic that we've been working with, adjusting the practice to most meet your own needs. There's a question here.
Thank you. I mean, when we have to deal with a lot of, like, emotional pain, and we develop, addiction or wrong habits in order to deal with that, how do we have to deal with the, or we should deal with the addictive part? So how much do we have to... I mean, for me, it's not easy thinking about trying to change without being judgmental of the part of me who's, you know, hooked in a, like, dysfunctional habit. Mm-hmm. So which is the best way, in your opinion, for your experience, to deal with? I mean, how much do I have to force myself to try to change? Because I know that, you know, we have to go through withdrawal, in a sense or another, if you want to get rid of bad habits in order to... But what is in between is quite painful. Mm-hmm. So how to... I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard. Yeah.
So it's a very big question, and also a few things come to mind that I can share. One of them is that our practice is always a combination of letting ourselves be... Letting ourselves be as we are, just as we are, without adding judgment to it. And also at the same time, mindfulness is not simply pure awareness. It involves, in every moment, change, the potential for change. Right? And as you mentioned, addiction, it makes me think of the serenity prayer, which is always, you know, what needs to change and what can I accept in the moment, right? Our practice of letting ourselves be just as we are is what we might be accepting. Like, for instance, we might be accepting that we are in an addictive process, right? And that might be something that we are accepting. We are allowing that to be just as it is, right? Naming it. And naming it, of course, is a very important first step. And we change what needs to be changed, right? By getting help, getting support for that, and at the same time, not abandoning ourselves in the process, right? We can notice any time that we're if we're in a recovery process, a process of change, a process of growth, whether it's a recovery process from an addiction or a process like recovering from grief or recovering from trauma, one of the most important things is to stay with ourselves in the process, moment to moment, to not abandon ourselves. So we might want to change our behaviors, but we don't want to throw ourselves out of our heart in the process. Yeah. So this practice of naming our experience, being with ourselves, being a friend to ourselves. You know, if we're on a journey like a recovery journey from an addiction, we need a friend in ourselves, right? We need ourselves to be a friend, and it would be, it will make the recovery so much easier if we stay by ourselves, right? If we become a friend to ourselves and help support ourselves through that process. I hope that's will give you some places to start. Thank you for your question. Is there someone else who has a question they'd like answered?
This is not so much a question, but another way of putting what you said, that Carl Rogers, I believe it was, and I'm just paraphrasing, said, until you can love yourself, you won't be able to change. And I've kind of have a way of interpreting that is that we see our ego out there, and we're asking to kind of kill that part of that. And we don't want to do that. And so it's a very difficult thing until you can really totally embrace and accept where you are. Then you have the freedom that you can change, but you aren't killing yourself.
Yeah, the freedom to choose, right? Because we feel whole. Yeah. Recently, I and another IMCW teacher, Jennifer Stanley, we led a 5-day retreat for women. It was a mindfulness and self-compassion retreat at Pearlstone just 2 weeks ago. And a few days ago, I got an email from someone who was at the retreat. And at the retreat, we were working with the question, what do I need right now? Before each time where there was an open space, so if there was a half an hour before lunch, and then there was the lunch time, and then maybe half an hour after lunch before the group got together again, what were we doing during that time? You know, and just like tonight, the time that between when we ended our formal session and when we began again the next morning, right? What do I need during those times? And in between, of course, we were doing a lot of sitting and walking and so forth, and also looking for the ease in our practices. And this is someone who actually came from a very long distance away and who got sick on the first day of the retreat. Actually, she arrived sick and then became sicker. And so Jennifer and I were meeting with her in her room a few times a day and asking her what did she need during that time. And she slept a great deal for a few days. And then towards the end of the retreat, rejoined the retreat, and we noticed a lot of weeping. And also her hand was on her heart, right? And she was with herself. So these are some words of what's possible when we stay close to ourselves, when we look for the ease, when we ask ourselves with sincerity, what do I need? And we, to the best of our ability, try to meet those needs, right? Given the universe of answers of what's possible in the moment. She said that there have been many broken parts of me, as with everyone, that have gathered in my cells and in my heart. Sadness that I couldn't shake. It has to do with many recent losses, a feeling that has sat in me for years. At the retreat, I was able to cry deeply. Everything I could not seem to let out came out. It was the best moment. My practice of self-compassion helped to bring me kindness into myself in a way I need. I feel set free. For the past 2 years, my legs have been weak. I could at times barely walk without stiffening pain. After our time together, my legs are without pain. They are strong, and I can go up and down stairs as if I never had a problem. I believe this practice has allowed me to heal myself at a cellular and metaphysical level. I don't know how else to describe it. I feel it's an honor to witness this kind of really beautiful work that is possible when we befriend ourselves in this way. So we are just about without time, so I'll invite you into just a very brief love and kindness practice. And this will be primarily for our Sangha, for those who are here in the room who have been a support to us tonight, and also those who aren't here tonight, our dear teachers and other Sangha members, including yourself in this circle of care, perhaps placing a hand or two on your heart again, sensing inside yourself the true desire for the well-being of this group and the individuals here, joining me in silently repeating these phrases inside yourself. May love and kindness travel with us today and be with us always. May we be safe and protected from inner and outer harm. May we be happy and contented. May we be healthy and strong. May we be at ease. May all beings be free from suffering. May these practices bring true joy. May these practices be of benefit to all beings.